to me. Okay. This means being recorded. Once President Brooks asked me to call the roll, indicate you are here, as well as give permission to record by verbally stating here, permission to record.
All right. I call the December 7th, 2021 committee of the whole meeting of Glencoe Park District to order. Lisa, please call the roll and open time.
Great, it's 7:01. Member Boren?
Here, permission to record.
Member Covey?
Here, permission to record.
Member Schneider?
Here, permission to record.
Member Spain?
Here, permission to record.
Chair Brooks?
Here, permission to record. Moving on matters from the public, it's our practice not to address questions at this time. However, we will take comments under advisement. Is there anyone who would like to make a verbal comment? If so, please limit comments to 3 minutes per person. And up at the podium is...
I think so.
You may. Andre Werman. You're 6 feet away.
Okay, so I'll be real quick. For those of you who don't know me, Andre Werman, I was a former park commissioner. And I think over a 6 year period, I probably chaired 10 to 12 park board committee meetings that touched on the subject of Lakeland Park and uses of Lakeland Park. The Lakeland Beach and Lakefront Park Advisory Group, which I chaired, went through a process through a mission and vision statement. And in that discussion, the sense of the Lakefront Park that the greatest asset is its use. And people really appreciated the views and the bucolic and the passive use of the park. Later, I chaired the Special Projects and Advisory and Facilities Committee, where we were looking, this is the last time we were looking at, the park board was looking at renovations of Lakefront Park. And I think at the time, if I remember correctly, the design consultant, which was Altamanu, recommended, one of the recommendations was to use the tennis courts area for passive use, playground, et cetera. I listened to one of the focus groups last night. There were people who talked about both tennis and pickleball, and it was a conversation, pickleball having been a loud sport. There were some people who said that it may detract from the tranquility of the users of the Lakeland Park, and even some of the neighbors mentioned that as well. So I was thinking about what's the highest and best use for that place, considering all the passive users, and there's probably many more of those than play any of the racket sports. I want to walk the park and hang out there for the mindfulness experience. I thought that it would be nice if the board would consider making some of that space on that tennis courts available for seating areas, picnic benches, et cetera. Taking the two, and so one option would be to take the two doubles tennis courts and moving them farther to the west, and with a singles court would be that space would be closest to the bluff. You would not use it, you just keep it open, put some picnic benches there. That could be a nice drop-off, pick-up place for summer camps, for the beach patrons. And where there is a lot of demand for pickleball, sounds like, and so one place I thought it would be a natural spot would be the farthest, the westernmost court in Central School tennis courts, where you wouldn't have an issue with noise, you wouldn't have an issue with them, with the pickleball players competing for parking at the beach, and you also open up the option to provide pickleball programs for the 5th through 8th graders at Central School. So I just wanted to share my thoughts with you on that for your consideration. I also, last thing I want to say, I really want to commend this board and staff for making a concerted outreach, well-publicized outreach, to get community input on this. And if you guys know, I'm all for that. I think this is great to do that. So I want you guys to kind of be commended for that. And with that, Madam President, I yield the rest of my time.
Which was over about half of them. Thank you so much for your comments. Is anyone else from the public interested in making a comment? Very well. We will move on then to the presentation from White on updated Watts Recreational Center design. Lisa Shepherd and Chris Liner will introduce staff from White and lead our discussion.
All right. So I believe Matt and Anya, come on up from White Design. We'll be talking about the Watts Recreation Center and some design elements.
First off, thank you so much for having me tonight.
You can take off your mask if you want. You're far enough away from us.
Thank you for that. I'm getting to read the eyes because we can't see the when we present these days. So it's nice. Some of the things that I recognize, some may be new. I think, you know, the first thing we want to do is kind of get everyone reintroduced to the Watts Recreation and Ice Facility concepts and how they evolved. And focus today on just some exterior design elements that we developed, kind of share them with you tonight, and then, you know, obviously the recording kind of interaction.
First, you might, this is a refresher for those that are, may not be familiar with the project, those that are, so these are the exterior elevations of the existing facility. This is the facade space, this street. This one over here, this is the kids club entry. This facade is the one that's facing the main ring. And this facade here is the one that's facing the studio ring. So these are all four sides of the existing facility. The floor plan, briefly, we have three stories in the building. Basement is just a team room and some auxiliary spaces. Stairway on each end, no elevator. First floor, this space houses the main spaces and main program spaces, with the main entry being this one over here, and very small vestibule that is the bottleneck for people coming in. Big rooms are coming in out to use the rings. The main open space before you enter the rings. This is the kids club over here. This is one of the program spaces. This is a nice one with high ceilings. And equipment rooms over here. Toilet rooms over here. And two good spaces for the safe. There's a couple of toilet rooms that are accessible from the outside. And the second floor, this is possibly a little bit older plan. This is the one we worked with when we started. I know that you guys did some renovation with the flooring and then you were causing a few additional programs that were previously. This is site isometric view. This is an existing site over here, showing you like the first view of the proportion of the building and of the building and multiple additions that happens here over the course of the, you know, years. So this is main building, this is another one, and addition that is flat roof over here. What we are showing over here, in order to improve the space, there's not really much land to add new addition. So what we're showing here, this is the flat roof area, one story. This is the natural spot to add more program space to the building over here. This is showing the massing of the second story addition over here. This is another design, which is the massing over here. And now we enter the new site plan, the new proposed plan, and new areas that we're developing. So main wings are staying with some improvements of the dashboard or sensor system. We are on the site, we're widening the main entry path to the main entry because there are two doors that look at the main entry a little bit here, and the two people coming in because they're new. We are recreating and adding the entry for the kids club over here because we are removing what's right now the garbage screening here. We're gaining plaza over the space at the front. by that, you know, we will do that. New player boxes over here. This is a new addition to the program that would enhance the offering. We're also on the site to extend the walkway to the viewing that they see over here. So this is in the nutshell what is happening to the site. This is a 3D view of overall project. This is a close-up view of the player's boxes. And I just want to mention the design of every page pretty much recognizable with new materials applied to it. But it requires also extending the fence. This will be more decorative fence, about 6 feet tall, around the player boxes. There is one entry here, ramped entry on one side, and there is also another entry just like it on the other side. This fence provides opportunity for some signage. We'll have to work with the requirements of the signage, the strict rules that tell us what we can or cannot do over here. So this is just right now a placeholder. We'll provide updates when we are more advanced with the design. So now going inside the building, main move, and the main thing that we're doing, we're adding the program on the second floor. So we are basically on the second floor here. We're multiplying what is over here. We're recreating the same thing on the second floor. We're activating second floor, and we're activating the first floor for everybody to use by including elevator in the program. So those spaces can be used. They're ADA compliant, and people with all elevators can use the entire building. This also provides more opportunity and space on the second floor. This is the multi-purpose room over here. Restrooms on the second floor. We are enhancing the restrooms here. They are ADA compliant right now, the way they're proposed. We're reconfiguring completely the front end here. We're adding vestibule underneath the existing canopy. We're just adding the second layer of glass, so we're trapping the cold air in the winter within the vestibule over here before people get into the front step, and they can just check in here and they can just keep going through the space and they can pick up this case when they're inside. So this is no longer a bottleneck, and the person that is here is not facing directly when they're coming in. The staff of this person that is sitting over here has the views into all directions and can double up also as a person at the front desk if necessary. On the kids' entry, what we are doing, we're adding the stair here. So kids walking from the school, that's over there, just walk in, enter the mud room. So this is the space that, you know, they can use their roots there, to leave more space in the actual program space for activities. So we don't have to recreate a room for books we have, etc. They could be left on separately. And the same configuration we have on the second floor.
One of the biggest things we wanted to solve is wayfinding and identification on the site. If you've been there, you know it can be a little bit confusing at where you're entering in. And more importantly, we wanted to define a control point for the kids coming in for both when they get dropped off and when parents pick them up. So the two entrances really kind of become better defined and separate. So it kind of provides a little more security and control for the staff that's dealing with the kids' clubs from maybe the public that can be coming in to use the facility and use the items.
The use part are separate. This is one use, and this is the secondary use, because they could use the secondary entry anyway. They don't go to the building.
And then, as Adam pointed out, activating it with accessibility. Probably the most needed thing, and it's been the most challenging thing, is kind of locating that elevator that kind of takes us from the basement level up to the third floor. Mm-hmm. Kind of right now, the heart of the building.
Right. And it is a little bit off, because it's not aligned you can see that it's a little bit pulled away from the wall of the building because the foundation is far away digging in for the elevator.
We have to have that for ADA.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
And because we want to have it as well.
We have looked at the neighborhoods, we looked at the different approaches to what to do to the existing building that is a brick and white trim, very traditional, that has been there forever, for a very long time. And one approach is to recreate the same language, the other approach is, you know, this is almost 2022, and just to see what other people are doing, what we are doing, when we're adding addition to the building that have more traditional flavor. And we pulled up a few examples, not necessarily what we did at Duke, but just to make you aware how we were thinking about the project and the approach to the building. One of them is like, this is very traditional building here, very traditional building, but they don't completely new in between. Early childhood center, but it's different. The language that they're trying to recreate is just recreating the color and the flavor of the brick. The matting is completely different. There are some building materials that are modern version of the brick. For example, this one is terracotta and a little bit different approach, more modern flavor. Even the houses, you can just keep the roof lines, but provides more modern flavor on the architecture, on the windows, bay windows, overhangs, sunroofs, etc. It doesn't have to be the repeat what you see over there right now. So we have studied a few options. We have studied 12 options. We're going to show you only one of a few variations of it. But then we, this position is over here. We're building a monster on something that is really one story, sort of going over there. And we have to be mindful and careful and respectful to the rest of the building over here. At the same time, this is the entry for the kids. And we don't want to compete with the main entry that's, very traditional and looks like it belongs to the building. So we want to have a little bit of fun over there while being respectful. So what we did, we recreated the roof line that you see here and here. This is the number 3 ridge roof line over there. But when we have the main entry, we pulled it out. So we pulled out the new from the old, so to speak. So it's like you're pulling out the drawer from your desk. We just pulled it out. It's on the side. We thought we can do it. It is not on the main facade, but it also speaks to the more modern times and more modern approach. And the shape of it, it is the shape of the house when you think about it, and the shape of this facade over here, it goes up and over and folds here to create a canopy. This is something that is helpful and useful when kids or parents are waiting outside. It's protected from the rain and from the weather as well. So in this option, we are showing a metal roof over here and metal panels. We are thinking we can pick up 3 colors of the brick. It could be either 3 color tiles or just take the 3 colors of the brick, mix them up, and see which one is the most common, and this will be the color of the metal panels. This over here, these are what we call them fins. This is not a solid wall, you can see through it. This is a little bit more like that. This could be the pattern. And like I said, we are working on this, our first approach here. And this is the space that is left when we remove the garbage enclosure on the side. So this is visible from the street. It's announced that it's entry, and hopefully it's leaving the parents and getting kids excited about it. We have tried a few other variations. We're trying to simplify it a little bit, simplify the roof line, connect it all together. And this is a example showing that there are color, and this is the example that shows four, the one on the top. And the next version is with what the colors we use, the white that is present on the tremolist and building, and we build the red inside, and we study different materials. This is stress poly, resin panel, the white for color and pattern. At the end, we collectively like this option the best. It's more respectful and it's less of an intervention to what is established already, which is a residential neighborhood. It does the trick, but it doesn't overwhelm the building, so to speak. And we also this view from the other side, so this would be the flight on the center field or walking from this point.
I really like how this, if it felt before when you went to Kids Club that, okay, you're going to go in this little side door, and there was nothing that really, you know, just kind of snuck in the side door. This announces that this is the place, this is a home for our after-school kids and our Richmond children. It really states the presence. When they come up to the building, there's no question of where do I go for Kids Club? ICE is that way. Kids Club or recreation programs, this way. So it really is a statement. Doesn't pick up a lot of the features that we're seeing in some of the houses in the neighborhood. So I think it will fit very well into the landscape.
It's a far cry from Golden to Fire Exit.
Yeah, it's a far cry from Golden, which it feels now. This really is a attractive site, and I like how they thought about the overhang, because there are times that kids wait outside after a Richmond program or something for their parents to come, have a mud room, which is brilliant, because you can't believe how much space is taken up in programming rooms with coats and boots and... really like the layout and the brightness of it. I see a lot of natural light coming into the building. So.
It keeps the scale of the original building and of the neighborhood, which is important, but it doesn't just replicate what's there. It kind of creates something that's a little more contemporary, that kind of advances the building making to the next generation of users, but without, you know, trying to compete or outdo a neighborhood that is, you know, it's part of.
So this was not what I was envisioning at all, but I love it. Beautiful. And this is not envisioning this being so separate. And I agree. I really like option one. I think option three is just way too out there for that space. But I like option two as well. But it's beautiful, and it will really add to that building.
The previous picture, it looked, and I like this a lot too. It looked like you were looking, yeah, it looked like you were looking sort of through the building, or is that actually a reflection off the breadth of the glass?
This is the reflection.
That's a reflection, okay.
The reflection of the glass.
Right. You're looking into it, but not through it.
Okay, good. Yeah. And there's no, on the other side, there's no opportunity for someone to hit the puck into the glass.
No.
Okay. Right. Tell me about it. And maybe this is beyond architecture. The HVAC, is this an addition to the existing HVAC, or is it separately?
It's likely to be a combination of both. Where we can reuse some of the existing units, we will be. But the upstairs, the second floor space will be new. And we've kind of studied strategically where we'll be able to place a new unit on that roof.
Okay.
And similar to that, the elevator is new. So it kind of becomes its own element through the building as well. So we start to get some opportunities to maybe tuck in equipment as well.
Right.
With it, so you're not seeing it.
Great. Thank you.
I like it. I think it is the more modern approach is, I think, more fun for the kids. And certainly sets it apart as not being an afterthought of use of the building, but makes it, and I think by not trying to imitate existing building exactly, it's kind of showing that there's two functions which they're very different, so it makes sense in a lot of ways.
You know, I'll just say I think we learned the hard way with Takeoff that limiting ourselves to the building that exists and trying to create space for our current use and needs is mission. I don't know. It's appropriate now to adapt this design to the way it's going to be used, the building will be used. I have a couple of quick questions. One is, I'm presuming this is a double height atrium. Is that what this glass on the north end?
This one is double height because it is the stairwell going up.
It's the stairwell going up. So it's not an entrance with a two-story atrium.
No.
Okay, good. Okay. Yes, I certainly concur with everyone that's a sign that looks really nice. And I presume I'm getting the vibe you two like this option one as well as a preference?
We do.
Okay.
It doesn't overwhelm us. It's not trying to be main entry.
Yes.
And it's for the kids. It's all the sides. It's a surprise. You walk around the building, you drive by the main entrance, then you drive around and say, oh, look at this.
So, on this point, we studied 12, at least 12, different studies, flat roof buildings, and it starts to evolve to where it almost points you to what's the right solution, and that's kind of probably one of the last ones that, you know, she
Yeah, and I really liked how you're referencing your inspirations within Glencoe, Biosphere, and other things, Jean Gang kind of vibe that I'm getting off of this. I have a specific question about the player's box on the slide that we had for that. Sometimes, and I understand why this is, you know, if I'm looking at this slide, it isn't really representative of the space around it because, of course, houses along the south end are abutting the ring. It's not, unfortunately, I wish it were, but it's not parkland with beautiful sidewalk. The issue that I am concerned about, first of all, this was not part of the original scope, or was it?
No, this was brought up between, that's a good question, the Watts Advisory Committee. This is one of the things they asked to see if we could possibly put this in. So this would have to be funded either by alternate source or the board just decide to fund it. We would bid it out as an alternate to see if we had the funding. But I think you, as I was explained to me, you can't think of this just as a player's box. So I was at Neon Night on Friday night, and I was there watching. And everybody was gathered around the little door of the small ring trying to see the kids interact in there. So you got a lot of bottled up neck in their area, especially when the Zamboni goes by, there's no place to go. So you have to look at that as not just a player's box, which it is, which Bobby could talk about forever about rentals and how we can rent this out as a rink for hockey if we have a play lunch. But it's also a viewer, a spectator, so parents going in there to watch their kids play hockey, or we use deck hockey mostly on this rink, so we would be able to use that for games for deck hockey. So I'm sure you can give some more input.
And right now we're limited on the studio to what we can do because there isn't the ability to switch players in and out, so we're not able to rent it for hockey games. It also increases our capacity for use on the studio. We're noticing big bottlenecks between the main and the studio right now because we're having so many people come to the rink. There's not enough space. So any additional space will be really welcomed. We are having some challenges too with the Zamboni. When we bring the Zamboni out, it makes it even tighter in the runway. So we're having major issues with corralling people, and this would absolutely help in addition to generating revenue.
Yeah, on one bench from the runway.
Yeah.
Made it like kind of a gathering space, and now it's really tough to get the machine.
And taking that back now, the people like the gathering space.
And then I appreciate that explanation, but I will remind everyone that what exists now, if you just wipe out the player's box and the sidewalk around it, is a landscape screen. So it's just thinking about how the community responds when we eat up green space, it is difficult. It really has to be justified, and what we would eat it up with would be something that I cringe to think there would be signage on it, but that's a whole other issue. We won't even discuss that. But that it would be something instead of bushes and decorative grasses that are now currently right along the edge of the rink, we would have this. So that is different not only from probably a sound perspective, but a visual perspective. So just keep in mind that this will have to go through all the usual process with neighbors and so forth going forward. But I do appreciate your explanation that it has, which I absolutely love, more than one use. And and thank you. And I sit on the lots committee, so I look forward to seeing if there really is some interest in that committee to contribute. As they, I understand they are interested in participating. So we will see how that goes. And this would be the place for it, I guess.
And there's no saying that we could not put we have to have the fence for safety reasons, people going in and out. There's nothing to say that we can't replicate that screen.
Yes.
With bushes or whatever.
Yes.
What we noticed opening weekend, I believe, we did a little sitting area kind of by the soccer fields over there. And what people really like and what they're craving, especially at Watts, is places to gather with their friends and hang out. And what we were talking as staff, after you guys left, you don't even know this, we're like, it would be interesting. We don't know if it would work. We don't even know if the village would let us do it because of setbacks and stuff.
Yeah.
If you even extended that fence out even further and put in area to do seating, like bonfire stations with a couple chairs around each one, and then in the summer it could convert back to, even further down this way, Anya, it would convert to take out the fire pits in it and put bago there or something like that and actually take out more space, so that actually parents could, as they're watching the kids do in here, maybe they'll come out here and sit. They want to stay with their kids close to the action but don't want to leave the facility. That might be a really cool place to do that in the winter and then actually use it as something in the summer and spring as far as back open. So if we can, depending on setbacks, bring the fence out further and then do the screening like this and on both sides, was something that really intrigued us as possible, another gathering area, kind of thinking outside the box.
Yeah.
And we don't know if the board's open to that. We're not even going to investigate that to see until we thought, let's see if you're on board with that, and then we would see if it's even possible to throw it to you. But that's kind of an idea.
Really? That's very interesting.
Yeah.
I sit on the plan commission too, Lisa. I love that idea, and also that'll really be helpful for rentals because you can imagine the kind of really fun, great parties, and so forth.
That's where we're thinking too.
So
kind of like stretching out the imagination if we could make it happen. But that would be really, it would really make it another community gathering point, not just dropping your kids off. How can you, if you drop them off and you come out and sit by the fire, and talk to your friends or whatever?
We struggle to find places to do this.
Yeah, correct.
And you're right, this is the message we hear.
Mm-hmm.
It is about gathering and socializing and so forth. It's so important. Does any idea?
Yeah, just to follow up on that. So they immediately across from our main rink and across from the kids' club, I mean, like all the school district property.
We actually own it, part of it.
Okay.
The school district, Chris can talk to this.
We, the park district and the school district, co-own the basketball courts, so the property line is kind of like right in the center of the existing basketball courts, all the way across the site. So the majority of the soccer field area is owned by the park district, but we have an easement agreement with the school district that they have their geothermal wells there, so we're a little limited in kind of moving out into that area with construction, but that's kind of where the property boundaries are.
And we use that for soccer. So it's not like we could actually move over into that area because that's very heavily used for soccer. We don't want to take that and gym for the school. So
yeah, it's just anywhere else in Pilot Garden. There's no rain.
Yeah.
But
that's where they're. Yep.
What is actually there when it's not winter? I can.
Exactly. Exactly.
Giant concrete slab.
Yeah.
I'm trying to envision that much space on that side of the studio.
There right now, there's Austrian pines against the actual board.
Uh-huh.
I will say some of the plant material that was selected, when it went in a 5 gallon bucket, now it's like 50 feet tall. So things have gotten really, really large there. So those Austrian pines that are up against the studio rink there are probably 18 feet in diameter. I mean, there's actually quite a bit of space there.
So, I just don't remember that much distance between the street.
It's probably, this isn't the scale, right? That's probably closer to scale.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we're not talking a huge area.
No.
We're not. We're talking, a couple fire pits, a couple, groups of four chairs, but just enough.
Yeah. I think it's important to note that, to Lisa Brooks' point, that the board, the player's box there and then that gathering area by the kids club entrance are outside the grant scope. Well,
yes,
those areas.
Correct.
So we're accountable for the IDNR for our $2.5 million grant for the addition, but we have to execute that to receive the grant, but the player's box and that gathering space are outside that grant expectation.
It's also nice that that's Soccer Field. Is there a direct line from the kids leaving school to the country?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. Yeah, I agree with you.
Just to throw it out there, like, I mean, how much is this player? Is this like a million? Is it a million?
Like,
what range
is
this?
Don't look at me. I don't know. Look at you. I don't know.
Yeah, we haven't really.
Yeah, we don't know yet.
We would look at something that would be probably, we'll see if we can find a pre-manufactured box, you know, the dugouts, things like that, from a deck, and then we would choose or we would design the materials around it so that it's contextual. So that would be the most economic way. I would hate to throw a number out there.
Like me, I would think we would.
I know you would. That's why.
I mean, for me, when I like drive up to that building, I don't find the screens up there attractive. Like, to me, what I picture in my mind, like in the hundreds of times, is just like a wall of brick. I don't even notice it there. So I don't think anything we do wouldn't add to that, in my opinion. So, I mean, I know there's houses there, but it's also right across from it is a tennis court and a sliding hill. So,
yeah,
it isn't an area where that, to me, is that much of a concern. I think that added amenities are much more of a positive than
any other comments from anyone? And are we all in agreement that option one will move to the meeting, board meeting?
I haven't spoken yet.
Okay.
I need my 2 cents.
Go ahead.
Question. Are there two different kinds of rooms connected? It's just two different materials? Because I couldn't tell from the pictures if that one that is over the current old school, what's that room, the wooden room?
The rec room?
The rec room. So there's, because it almost looks like it's three different materials. That room that's over the rec room, not that one, that one. Mm-hmm. If that isn't today,
yes,
it's not changing, everything's the same.
Yep.
The material on that roof, the roof behind it, and the roof to the right are all going to be the same?
Yes.
Thank goodness. I thought there were going to be like four
different
kinds of rooms.
No.
I was like, I'm afraid you guys are all talking about this to me that is not attractive. I'm wrong.
Nor to us.
Guys, so there's two different types of materials. Thank you for not doing a flat roof because I hate flat roofs. I'm sure Chris does as well. On top, where the elevator sits, is that flat up there?
This one is flat.
Yeah, that one is flat. Chris, does that cause you heartache?
No, it's going to have something to do with it. It's not going to be
it's got some
flat. Right?
Yeah.
And then you have a similar roof here at Dagan, you would never even know where it is.
Listen, I hate flat roofs. That was all one question. Second question. The see the studio ring? Can you show me how you access that? The bench seating, you're going to skate to it to access it. Is there any access to that bench without skating?
Yeah, you can walk around it.
Around the side.
Where is the time?
The little thing's not working, is it?
You
can go back.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So you access it when you access it from the sidewalk.
Right.
You
need
to
just hire
because
it's the same thing. Yeah. But is there a door? Is there a door on the
south side
of the building? Where the window
is. Michael, you have to walk. What they're proposing is you walk out the existing main ring doors and you would walk around the building to that.
Okay. There's no
door inside the building.
There's no door where Ann used to sit and collect our passes.
Correct. There's no door there.
You still have to go around. You have to go in, pay, go around.
But there is the option to not go into the building, potentially, like we do.
For that copy. So
yeah,
you can just have the gate.
Like there.
And there's an option.
There's also the gate. That's a special use, special event.
So basically, they've shown us being able, for spectators to be able to walk and enter into both players' boxes without having to step across the ice. So parents can go into the boxes now, or anybody with shoes on, versus having to walk across the ice, which is an industry standard as far as the players' box goes. Okay.
Good question.
Anything else, Michael? Are you good with option one?
I will state for the record that I am not an aesthetic person. Same thing with the railings on the beach. Same thing with the lights at Hawk. I am thrilled that we have a talented group of people that all agree, and therefore, I'm on board.
Okay. If there's nothing else.
So we have consensus, option one.
Yes.
Because we're going to tell them we're going with option one. They're going to continue on the design road so that we don't hold up anything.
Great.
And then we'll do official, approvals and everything at the next meeting.
Fantastic.
So.
Okay. Very good.
Thank you.
Appreciate the presentation. Thank you so much.
Very nice.
Consensus to pursue any kind of a pavilion area there?
Is there consensus for that pavilion area to draw? To what design that as alternate?
I don't know.
For me, yes. Carol?
Yes.
Marsh?
Yes.
Good, Michael.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. Thanks. Very good. Have a nice evening. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Okay. So we will move on then to the discussion on our need for construction management firm for Watts Recreational Center renovation. Again, Lisa and Chris will lead the discussion.
Great. We just want to explain the process of a construction management firm and the need for it. And this was included in our park grant. But just with new board members, we just want to explain the need for it, what it does, and what the process we're going through right now to select one. So I'm going to throw it over to Chris.
So, as I stated in the memo, typically the project we're managing in-house, myself, and then the contractual architect or engineer, border around $2 million. Once we start to kind of cross that $2 million threshold is where projects in an order of magnitude start getting larger and larger and larger. Right now, the way this project is looking, we're looking at that $3.8, $4.2 million working construction budget, which triggers just the additional levels of support that we need at the staff level. So for us, an outside construction manager is someone that could be potentially separate from White & Company, the architect. So White has submitted for the job. We would interview them for it, but it would be a separate department or a separate firm. Basically, that provides us a third-party construction manager. That's basically our ally if there's a problem with the architect or a problem with the contractor. So one of the challenges that happens in the Take a Center renovation is the CM is where the issues happen for us. The role of a construction manager is to deliver a functionally and financially viable project coordinated seamlessly between multiple trades. I feel like I said that before, right? So retaining the construction manager, which is typically 45%, is included in the grant process. We sent out a request for qualifications. So we chose firms that we knew were going to be able to be successful in our environment, in our community, and on our project, and we asked them for their qualifications. We have an interview process with the firms that are selected, and then we hope to come back to recommend to the board basically the firm that we would want to choose. So, one second. Okay. So basically in the project role, so the architect is designing the owner proof concept like we saw tonight. They're working to develop construction drawings, determining site access, material quantities. They develop a bid package for each trade. That third-party construction manager would support us by acting as an outside owner's representative to evaluate those drawings and those architectural plans, confirm material quantities, manage the submittal process, and review the cost estimates. They also provide on-site daily presence with a degree construction manager, whether they're an engineer, a CM, or an architect. The on-site direction is very necessary for a project of this size. They can assist us with oversight of long lead time items and also managing shortages. And then on a side note, they can also help to keep us informed and navigate organized labor concerns, which once we start to get this large of a project, can start to become an issue for us. So our role as the owner, myself, the director of parks, I typically coordinate all the professional service providers, communicate the budget expectations, project timeline, I manage communication between the other units of local government, approve the payables, keep the board, the community informed on the project, and that's all done with the support of a third-party construction manager to help navigate the project. So any specific questions related to that?
So in layman's term, I asked Chris to, dumb it down. So we'll pay for construction management the first time they catch a contractor making a mistake. For example, if they go in and they pour, you know, the specs call for 6 inches of concrete and they pour 2, he'll catch that, and that mistake could be the cost of his fees.
Yeah.
That's all right?
Yeah, it avoids border cutting big time because it's an on-site presence. This is how we manage this rail. It's literally someone who's on the job every single day.
So I'll give you my 2 cents as someone who manages massive multi-million-dollar projects. We almost always have either internal or external out there, and you, for a project of you know, $3-4 million, you're going to want this. I think for me, the question, Chris, is, as you mentioned, White wants to participate. To me, the ultimate question is, you know, do you want someone completely independent, or do you want somebody that is really familiarized with the sort of design and construction, the design aspect of it? There's pros and cons to both. I feel more strongly that we have one rather than who it is, but that is just my two cents.
Yeah, and then that's what we're asking. We're going to evaluate that because we had that discussion back and forth. We're going to bring in, and our team will be Chris, John, Bobby, myself, Adam, who will be interviewing the firms. And then we'll bring the recommended firm back to the board at the next board meeting. But we will be evaluating that that aspect of it too. I tend to want to go with a firm totally separate from the architect, because if the architect has some kind of flaw in their design, I don't know, I'm afraid the construction manager, because they work for the same firm, would kind of, you know,
right.
I want someone, a third, separate third party, to watch our interests on both sides. So that's why I tend to go for.
I think that's the ultimate question. For me, I think it's not a matter of yes or no, it's a matter of which firm you go.
Right, exactly.
But that's, I'm one of five folks here.
I agree with that. I don't think it makes sense to use the same one.
But you're okay with us pursuing interviewing to bring back the recommended firm?
Right.
Yep, okay, perfect.
You have two questions on the table, right?
I do. Well, our main question is just really to make sure you understand why we're going to do the construction management route and make sure everybody's okay with that. Again, it was part of our park grant and our figuring out how much this project would cost. So
we really are just moving forward a consensus opinion that
yes,
we agree to construction management. How you choose the firm and that will be a staff decision that will happen later.
Yep, and then we'll bring the final contract for approval.
Okay, very good. And any dissent on this construction management at all? Any questions for Chris about it?
I like this point about having it separate. It's appealing to me. And I don't know if there's, I assume that engineer on site is kind of in your face. Hey, this is it. These are very genteel people who are very artistic. I don't know if they have somebody with a personality who you're looking for to be on site and measure
company. Oh, they do.
Do they?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they do. They do. These are the architects, and then they have a totally different personality for that. Yeah. Yeah, they do have meetings.
The meetings don't sell. You know, they don't have officials like those involved that are cracking stalls out.
It's like when Chris and I go out, I'm the, you know, fluffy one, and he's like,
Chris is the
rubber
heel.
The basic level,
I
still like, he's coming. I like the idea of somebody who's completely independent and doesn't feel any obligation to the architect. But that's just me.
That's usually the way that people go. The only reason, you know, as I mentioned, if there's pros and cons to it, the con to it is that you don't have someone who's sort of intimate with the design and intimate with the folks there. So again, I think there's multiple ways to go through it. It sounds like more people than less people want to have a completely independent time. You can't go wrong.
Right.
Either way.
I think you were wrong in saying we don't need someone to construction manager. That's why there's two questions on the table.
Yeah.
You go wrong with not doing it, and then you can go right and less right.
Correct. There you go. Carol?
I agree with Michael for the record. I don't know if there's anything specific that's unique about this design that would benefit from having them involved, but I think they can point that I don't have all the information, but in terms of master, it sounds great.
Yeah, I agree. I know nothing about it, but I know that we need it, and I guess you've got your consensus.
Okay, we do. We're going to go forward and we're going to bring up the firm that we feel most qualified to a January meeting. Perfect.
Very good. Okay, moving on to discussion on Fund 65 recommended capital projects. Lisa will lead the discussion.
Excellent. I think you're going to put something up on the screen. So, it's funny that former Commissioner Lerman's here because many years ago he asked for a more detailed Fund 65 report instead of just saying, here's putting in the budget and not really telling the board what's in Fund 65. So, this has been our exercise ever since, is to kind of bring to you the Fund 65 projects. And I wish that I could say there's illusion of choice whether you can do it or not. You can, but then we have some catastrophic failures in our system. So this is our presentation of our proposed capital Fund 65 for consideration of the board. So, Chris?
All right, so this is all the fun stuff. For me, at least, right?
Fund
both ways. So I'm just going to kind of hit on the high points, and if anybody has any specific questions, I can absolutely address them. So the first and the biggest item in this year's Fund 65 budget is the multi-purpose wing condenser and air handler rebuild. As some of the longer-serving board members may remember, we are phasing in the replacement of these three units at the Take-Up Center. We completed the first replacement this fiscal year. Recommending the second replacement next fiscal year and the third replacement in the fiscal year after that. So that's going to help us avoid $600,000 worth of HVAC replacements in 1 year. The current unit is an R22 refrigerant unit, which is no longer serviced. We'll talk a little bit about that later. But this is a long lead time item, so we're really in a position where if this unit fails, we could be in a 6 to 10 week no cooling type situation. The unit is 14 years old. The recommended service life is 15 years. So, any questions? Okay. So, we have tuck pointing at Glencoe Beach and windows of the Saffron Beach House. So, I have some photos here of the beach house and some of the surrounding stone walls. You can see the photos, as much as we try, the windows of the concession / program area are completely falling apart. These were installed in the 1990s renovation. They're made out of plywood. They're not the right material for this location. What we would be recommending is to bring back Ed Torres with Barlatoza, who's the preservation architect who we've worked with on the beach house before to help us to get the historically appropriate windows as well as the appropriate finishes for that environment. In addition, there is an allowance for tuck pointing. We've been doing about $80,000 to $90,000 for the tuck pointing at the beach each year for the last 3 years. So, as you may remember, we started with the halfway house. There were repairs to the wall. We tuck pointed the beach house last year. This will likely be additional phases for the next 3 to 4 years, so we can get through the entirety of the tuck pointing that's necessary. So you can see in this photo, I was able to put my finger several inches into the stone wall. That is not ideal. You can see here, this is a wall that was actually cleaned and tuck pointed last year, where this area has not been tuck pointed. So you can see the vast discrepancy between clean and tuck pointed to not tuck pointed. We're recommending tuck pointing the knee wall that's in front of the beach house, as well as a section of wall that is directly in front of the halfway house, and use those remaining funds. So. IT hardware and technology, so something that John and I are collaborating on. We historically budget $50,000 per fiscal year for workstation replacements, servers, warranties, routers. One of the things that we're working on right now is a security scan to help us to limit our cyber liability, which is something that is a great concern of the Perturba membership. So once we go through that scan process, they'll be giving us a breakdown of any potential risks that we may have in our system and our security, so we have some funds budgeted to correct anything in the future fiscal year. Fleet truck. So this is near and dear to my heart. Chevy 2500. This truck is 21 years old. It is the oldest truck in our fleet. It's an oldie but a goodie. So we're asking the board for permission to replace this truck, included in the cost is a lifting and plow. So this currently functions as our one of our backup trucks that we use for seasonal staff. So it's a pretty rough shape. So it's funny, whenever I give Lisa a tour of the parks, this is the truck I always pick her up in right before budget season.
It's totally true. I thought, is this the same photo that we recycle every year? And he said, no, I'll show you.
It's actually not, but
today. And she's like, that truck looks familiar. And I'm like, I'm sorry if that's so. I'll say, hey, Lisa, let's go look at you. Or, I don't know. I'll take you up.
Roll up in this truck.
This is a heck of a lot nicer than the first car I ran.
If he forgets, I come from a farming family. We just put a piece of plywood on the floor and use it for 10 more years.
Well, that's the part of the truck you can see, right? So, well, that's what you can't see.
If there's no holes in the floorboard, then that truck still has about 5-6 more years in it.
That's a good idea. I'm usually going to pull the floorboard. So, R22 refrigerant. So, this is the least fun thing I have ever put in a budget. So I won't bore you with reading it. Basically, R22 refrigerant is the most commonly used refrigerant in the United States. So it began production in 2020. Prices skyrocketed. So we've seen a 200% increase in costs. We're planned to have R22 as a refrigerant completely eliminated from our HVAC system by the end of fiscal year 2024, with the exception of the Watts isomate. So the compressors at Watts run on R22. So for a little comparison's sake, when those machines were installed, we were probably paying $2 to $3 a pound for the refrigerant. We're now paying $30 a pound. So we have a stockpile of refrigerant, and my concern is that as we continue to run the rink out for its remainder of its useful life, 8 to 10 years, we're gonna find that the refrigerant is no longer available. Refrigerant leaks, unfortunately, are a common part of ice rink operations. Last year we had to add 10 30-pound jugs to our system as we started to back up. So my goal is to stockpile the refrigerant so we can ensure continued continuity of operations for the next 10 years.
Does it go bad?
No.
Does it
explode? No.
And we do
have it'll burn, but it won't explode.
Is it toxic?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, don't drink that. So we actually have staff members that are licensed by the EPA to purchase the product, and it's stored according to manufacturers. And it's not terribly volatile when it's stored. It comes in like a steel jug with a little spigot on it. It's not something that you're worried about, like ignition or anything like that.
And we do store it securely,
yes.
And we do have a two-key system to check it to access it, because it is so valuable.
It's a high theft item.
And there's also checks and balances with John's team. So every year he'll go and check to make sure if we say we have 10 jugs, that we have 10 jugs type thing. So
yeah, so I mean, for just comparative sakes, 3 years ago we were paying $300 for a 30-pound jug, now we're paying $950.
So my question was going to be, is that one of these, I don't know if it's not producing, I get that. Is this a, not that much money, so I'm not all that concerned about it, but is this a, post-pandemic supply chain
That's
issue
a good
where
question.
The prices come down next year, and we're sort of, like, I feel like you're doing it to hedge your bets. You're really thinking of hedge here. And I guess the question is what evidence do we have that this is the right hedge state?
So they ended for production in 2020. So that means that in the continental United States, there's no more new refrigerant. The only refrigerant that's available is what was previously manufactured and what is recycled. Recycled refrigerant, I prefer not to go that route if we don't have to, because you don't know the quality of what you're getting. And we're not putting it into a system where parts can be got off the shelf. If we have a problem with the compressors, stuff has to come from Sweden. So, do I think the longer that the refrigerant is out of service, the less and less units they'll need and run it. So, 5 or 6 years from now, 7 years from now, you might find the price that goes down, but I think in the short term, the price is going to continue to rise in the next 3 years, because there's still a lot of units. I believe you were not able to make any new units after 2019 that ran out in 2018. So there's still a lot of units that are in circulation that have the problem. So like our multi-purpose unit carries about 500 pounds. Our community hall unit that powers this room carries 500 pounds. If we have to get one of those units, we would just have to pay whatever it costs to fix it.
And the only demand for this product is if there is a leak, because it should just recirculate.
Correct.
And be fine.
Correct.
So I don't really, it's not the most expensive, but I just want to make sure that we're thinking about this in the right way, that we're not, it is a hedge.
It is a hedge. You're absolutely right.
But you have to understand it.
I'm okay with it.
If we don't have it, what is the perception of not opening lots? per season.
Well,
and
so
really to hedge that bet.
So if we, let's say,
I don't think it's ever going to be inaccessible. I agree with you.
So what's going to happen if it's going to be cross prohibitive? So
yep.
We're going to have what you next. You have like an end of days week, maybe it's 70% of what you have in your system. At that point, it's going to be more cost effective to bring in temporary cooling and have, like, you know how they set up the Winter Classic at the Wrigley Field where they put the ice rink down. You're going to bring in a semi-trailer next to the building and have those compressors there because the refrigerant that you need costs $400,000. So you're going to hedge your bets and you're going to spend, say, you know, $175 to run the rink for a year. So that would be kind of worst case scenario, but basically it's a hedge. You're absolutely right.
So when do we replace these compressors? Like, when were they replaced and then this is not part of the last
year? No. So these compressors were done in the original Watts renovation in the 90s. So when we had the engineering assessment done of the facility, they said, you know, based on the condition they're in, you know, we expect 8 to 10 more years of useful life, and that was a year or 2 years ago. So we're really looking at these as an 8 to 10 year item to continue to be in service. In the renovation, we are replacing the computer control system on the existing compressors, but the machines are remaining. They're in good condition, and it's unfortunate that they can't be retrofitted to run on other refrigerant.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Any other questions? This is not a fun one, right?
No.
That's why you get all the questions now. The other ones are like, can't kids only play basketball? And we want air conditioning.
Right? I get that.
This is the gym floor, so as I noted in my memo, we seal it every year. The sealant goes up every 10 to 15 years. It has to be sanded down to the bare wood. Or the sealant can sheet off and create uneven areas of wear. So you can see on one of the painted areas, sealant is already starting to sheet off at the cracks. When you do take the floor down, the bare wood is when you have the opportunity to paint new stripes for programs like pickleball and things like that that weren't in existence in 2008. So this is another fun one. I'll give you guys, this is my son Dean. He's here for height perspective. This is boxing out a picture taken now. So I'm looking at requesting a design study for the EC entrance. So the existing ADA ramp that was done in the 2008 renovation was basically just sandwiched on top of the existing 1955 stairs, which are in great shape considering how old they are. But my concern is that we're seeing failure points all over the ramp, and that part of that failure could be a failure of the 1955 stairs underneath it. In addition, I'd like to look at what potentially could be done to help streamline the entrance and exit to the site of the building. It is very difficult to get in and out of there with a buggy, with groups of kids. The mountable curb is all the way down at the end of the ADA ramp versus right in front of the building. There's just a lot of things there that make it difficult to easily transition in and out of the building. And I'd like to just basically develop an order of magnitude of what some of those corrections might cost as we repair this ramp, because the ramp is going to have to be repaired.
So again, we're spending money now for a project that may not be till next year. But
or even further out.
Or even further out, depending on what we have, yeah.
But basically design fees. Mm-hmm. Taking parking lot light upgrades, so as per our strategic plan, we targeted this as a sustainability upgrade. We've got existing HID lights in the parking lot that were installed in 2008. They're very energy inefficient. We'd like to source new LED heads and put them on our existing poles so we don't have to replace everything.
Electric bill go down?
Yes. I don't have an auditing cost savings. Typically it's 3 years that they pay for the new fixtures in its entirety, but I don't have an audited number.
You've got an MPP positive somewhere in the next 10 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, just the labor, you won't have to change those bulbs. I mean, I have to change the bulbs every 3 years. Just that alone. Director initiatives, I'll turn this one.
That's mine. I know it's not director, it's really board and director initiatives. So this is a little money that we keep in account every year for those things that come up when the kid comes to the board meeting and says, I really want a tennis backboard. I can say, Chris ordered a tennis backboard. So we leave some money in there to do those things that we aren't expecting that people, the community really wants. And has been funding the backboards, or you know, there's other things that come up that I'll say, let's use that money for. for that. So that's where we always keep a $15,000 balance. Sometimes we spend it all, sometimes we only spend half of that. So.
For one year.
Yes, we keep, we do that every year, and then, you know, because we don't know what people are going to ask for. Sorry, Chris. They just they trust me. Nope, we're getting, we're all good.
this is a great setting for this one. We're looking to install a permanent professional sound system. We're currently using a number of different cordless systems that can be not as effective as they need to be for community meetings. We're looking to have this available for community events, grants, or programs. I did include a picture from the Watts advisory, or the Watts community meeting, and then just a special event set.
My guess is when they put this room in, they value engineered out the sound, because every room this site has a PA system in it.
Yeah.
And it's as simple as now we can probably have wireless mics set up in front of each commissioner for meetings so we can better do our meeting. So, I mean, I think this is a no-brainer, too. And we have no idea. This is just a whole placeholder up to $25,000. So it may be less than that. So we'll have a bring the company out to really evaluate this. Any else? Anything, Bobby?
No.
No?
You got it.
Adam?
So I have a question that actually goes back, you don't have to about this slide, but to the air conditioning systems for here, as well as what we're thinking about for Watts for the new building. Who knows if COVID's going to be here for a long time. Are we looking at, I know there's enhanced filtration for the Children's Center, are we looking at changing filtration somehow, making the air?
It's a great question. So part of our automated building system here take at the building control computer is it ensures that an appropriate amount of makeup air goes into every room based on the identified maximum capacity of the room. So in theory, based on the building automated system, every room gets a certain amount of fresh air at all times in the taking center based on the perceived occupancy of that room. So we have, basically upgunned certain HVAC units just based on the usage. The multipurpose wing is not one of those units. We haven't done that previously. As far as this project goes, it's really changing the condenser and changing the guts in an existing unit. It's not changing an entire unit. We have done needlepoint bipolar ionization filters down in early childhood, and we could look to something like that. I mean, it would push the budget for sure, but it is something that we could include if the board feels strongly about that. In probably another $10,000-$12,000 for, I don't know if you guys are familiar with needlepoint. It's like a crazy word for basically it ionizes the air and allegedly kills COVID and other airborne bacteria.
It's a UV.
Yes,
right?
it's like the same technology that you get in an ionizer. Like an air filter. Like a portable air filter, like a Dyson air filter that you put in your house.
Right.
There is science behind it. It's not like a snake oil product.
We install them in our place here.
Yeah.
Is that the UV? Because
no.
What is the UV?
UV only sanitizes at the point of sanitization. So if you've got the UV light in the air panel, water, air, whatever it is, that passes under the light, that's the only time the UV sanitizes it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the idea behind needlepoint bipolar ionization is it creates these negatively charged ions that are supposed to go out in the air and basically like suck up COVID and other viruses and bacteria and remove some kind of water that allows them to thrive. I'm honestly not a biologist. The salesperson that sold us this for EC had like a 40-page packet, which we didn't provide to the board to explain all of this. So it is a vetted, scientifically proven process. So I mean, it's something we could include if we wanted to. I mean, for an additional cost.
Do we have with early childhood center? There's really no way to know. I guess you could say the science works. And we aren't having problems.
Well, it seems it works. I mean, it works in the sense that like every system we have by far exceeds what the minimum standards are for our application. So we have a very highly functioning, highly well-maintained system. So,
can I give you an audited data to say, well, because we invested this $6,500, we had three less COVID cases at the data center? I can't say that.
Sure. I guess all I'm thinking of is 2-3 years from now, I don't want somebody to come in and stand here and say, hey, I spent $203,000 in, you know, how much would it cost just to do some sort of filtration? And I have no idea what the right answer is. It would seem like it's a time to think about it. And if it's not the right thing, then reject it.
We put one in early childhood at the height of the pandemic down on that one for like $5,700.
It's not combined with this, you could retrofit, right. You could do it in the basketball court.
Well, it has to be, the gym units are different. I don't know if it would be able to be retrofitted on a gym, but it would be able to be on the cabinet unit that filters the air for multi-purpose.
Okay.
If we so chose.
I just think we have to consider this at this time. Consider it. We need to see how much this is going to cost. I just think the times are dictating to us that we have to consider.
So, Chris, why don't you bring it back, go find out more detailed pricing and bring it back in when we do discuss the budget.
That'll
be added.
Then we're able to do that. Yep. Good
point. Thank
you.
Good.
Doesn't kill any bad, or maybe want to hear those.
No.
We have to figure out like how much of it is how much makes us feel good versus how much is there really sort of action behind it that you're gonna get. Like if you think about, I imagine the protocols that we took with masking and opening up windows and social distancing were probably 10 to 15 times more impactful than a filtration system like this.
But you don't know.
If you really want to know, I don't think it's Chris's job to find out. If we want to know, then we should probably have someone that we feel confident in telling us whether or not this is worth it.
I would be hesitant to just bring a salesperson.
Someone from Derma or someone like that that they know.
What Derma would say is that the HVAC system in the Tega Center, based on our maintenance plan, based on our maintenance records, far exceeds the majority of the membership in quality and function. Mm-hmm. So, like, as far as the legal standard goes, as far as DCFS, as far as really anything that we can compare ourselves to, we far exceed that based on the investments that we've made. I mean, we've got MERV 19 filters in there. We have a phenomenal HVAC maintenance program. I mean, I would put our units up against any unit in the Derma membership as far as quality.
If that's the case, that says to me, that says a lot. And you know,
Derma is not going to tell us to buy negative point bipolar ionization because 90% of their membership can't afford it.
Replacing the HVAC, I'm sorry, between now and 2024.
So we would. Replace the second multi-purpose unit in next fiscal year, which starts after March 1st.
Okay.
So that's the unit 2 of 3. The first unit was replaced this year in August. So then we would be recommending to replace the third unit the following year, which is the unit that does the community work.
So one way to look at it is the COVID rates are moving up rapidly and may get to the highest levels ever around here. We're in the wintertime and the doors are closed. If we don't have any issues here throughout between now and March, then we're probably in pretty good shape. But we're going to find out if we need to go to a higher level.
I don't think you can judge it by then. We've made it through the pandemic with relatively low incident rates, but because of everything we're doing. It could just be someone that just happened to come.
He has a sleepover and 4 kids get...
Right, and I don't think it has anything to do with our filtration system because they could be someplace else and bring it in. So let's do this. Because we can take a lot of time debating this subject. We'll go back and find more information, find how much it's cost, because that would be a big factor in the pros, cons, you know, whether, you know, cost analysis of it, and we'll bring it back at a different time before the budget's passed.
And you're not going to bring a salesperson in here?
No, we're not. We're not bringing a salesperson in. We're going to do homework.
I do think that the key that you mentioned is that we are leaps and bounds ahead of our competitors, our peers, I should say, our peers, and far advanced considering the standards.
I think they'll just want that gold medal there.
Yeah. I think that you're probably right.
Well, and I do think that.
But we have to be really, really cognizant because people also want that gold medal baseball quality, and they want the gold medal soccer field quality. And so that's where my head is here. It's like, you know, we hear this in the baseball fields all the time that we're okay having B fields. Now, you have the rationale that one is safety versus enjoyability, but I don't think any of us know how incrementally more safe it is. And that's what I think. If you need more information, or we're okay with the standards that we have.
I think you do some more analysis and then you figure out what's the right answer.
Yeah.
We just don't know that.
If it's $3,000 and everybody wants to do it, then it's $3,000.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Less refrigerant.
Oh,
exactly. That's right. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, just buy less refrigerant.
Yeah. It's only what happens. All right. Any other questions?
Interesting. Very good.
All right.
That's it, Chris?
That's it.
Well done. Yeah. Thank you so much. Any questions for Chris?
I have to ask this, Jeff. I have to be mentioned this. But like, I feel like we did this last year. Like, we did do something
every
year. We've been doing it. We do it. We do something at least every year.
No,
like deja vu. Yes, we're always doing stuff at the beach. Yeah. The walls and top pointing.
We did specifically at Zafra, right?
Yes. So last year at Zafra, we did the stucco, the stone arches. We repaired the back gutter, and we made some other masonry repairs, but we did not do the windows, and we did not tuck point the knee wall in front of the building or any other areas. It was really just that back wall along the block itself. So
we try to break it down into formal.
You just don't have the resources to do an $800,000 or $900,000 project and tuck pointing in 1 year.
Spread it out. Yeah. That's good. And I understand that. Thank you. Okay, very good. Let us move on to update on the focus groups that were held yesterday.
Yeah, we're not giving you results because that would be really a fast turnaround.
Yeah.
What I just want to do, because I didn't really have a chance to talk to you about the process that we're going to go through, as you know, the board approved conceptual plans designed for lakefront tennis courts should we have funding in the future for this project. So we knew from past experience that tennis is a hot button issue at Lakefront and throughout our community. We saw it at West also. When we changed the historical layout of an item. But at the same time, we also know that pickleball is really up and coming sport just based on our participation in our classes. As is tennis. Tennis is going through the roof too. So when people say people aren't playing tennis in Glencoe, that's not true either. We have both sports really heavily used in Glencoe. So what we did is that decided to hire a private party to handle these focus groups. What I didn't want to do is give any illusion that staff or board have a bias for one kind of tennis court or another, because we really don't. But the illusion is if I ran the focus group, oh, you're trying to lead me down this way to pick this option. And that's not true. So what we did is hired Elsa Fisher from Barry Dunn. Elsa is familiar with Glencoe. She used to work next door at Northbrook and at Glenview, so she knows this area. And she also worked with Barbara Heller on our focus group for dog parks. So very much experienced in this realm. Hired her to come out and conduct these focus groups. We sent over 170 emails to everybody that was on our tennis database, and that included all the names we captured last year when we were permit only for our tennis courts. We had a lot of names. Everybody in pickleball classes, everybody in tennis classes, all those names. So we sent a direct email saying we're having a focus group to talk about this project that's not even funded yet, but we're thinking about improving. And then we sent it to all of our social media places. We put it on our website. We really wanted for this part of our community impact, and this is just our community feedback, this is just the first step. We wanted to see what the racket players really wanted for this project, if we were going to change anything. So I didn't bring the whole presentation. We gave Elsa, Barry Dunn, data of our court usage, how many courts we have, the data that we had from permits, from classes, and things like that. So, and we do have a lot of tennis permits out there. We gave her all the data to present to kind of educate the people that were attending. And then we just asked some very basic questions. Would you like pickleball to be played, or pickleball and tennis courts here? We had Hitchcock give us a design, very, very basic design of what it would look like for the current configuration, what it would look like if we had two tennis courts and two pickleball, what it would look like if we had one tennis court and four pickleball, all these configurations, and ask people to vote on it, what they wanted. So she asked a series of questions in the thing. We'll give you that whole presentation when we give you the results of that. So from there, we actually were able to accommodate anybody who contacted us and said, yes, I want to come to the focus group. So we originally had two slots open. We added a third one. So we were able to accommodate everybody that wanted to attend a focus group. In addition to, and we're taking feedback from anybody who couldn't make a focus group but really wants to tell us what they thought. We'll be included in those things. From there, we plan to share those results to you in January, February, depending on which meeting. And we also want to have a community meeting, like we do for every other park redesign. Community meeting, and with that, how we would advertise is, again, anybody who's on the database for tennis or pickleball, the same people, we'd also send it out to our full database of park district users. We'd go on all of our social media. We could put the sign boards that we have done through every project out at Lakefront saying we're going to be talking about this this project at such and such a day, and we would give letters to all the media neighbors. Even though out of the immediate neighbors, five of them did attend our focus groups. So that will be another thing. They will talk about tennis and the playground at that time, because if you recall, we were looking at to see if we can package both of them at the same time to minimize the disruption. I say all this because we're just developing a plan. We don't even know when this is going to be funded. It looks like there's a possibility that we'll have enough fund balances to do it this year. We won't know until probably March, April, May, June, and to know for sure for when we can fund this and when this project will go ahead. But I think the board and staff will all agree that that court is at the end of its useful life and we have to do something within 2 years. And so we want to be able to go and be ready to do it once we know if we can fund this. So you can see we're going to get a lot of more community input on this, talk about everything. The focus groups gave us some insight of some concerns that people may have, or and some concerns are noise, parking. You know, some people, I remember that gentleman came to you and said, oh, you should put all pickleball courts there so they can have tournaments. Is that really the place for that? So we're going to take all that into account, and you're going to get all this feedback, and ultimately it's up to you to make the final decision. So I just wanted to give you the whole process that we're going through should you get any questions in the community, since we already started holding the focus groups. So that was not just, oh, we're only doing the focus groups looking at the tennis players. That was just one step, and we're going to continue on for our feedback. It'll go to community, and then it'll come to committee throughout this whole time. Anybody who engages with us in a focus group, in a community meeting, will always get notification whenever the board talks about this. So there's no illusion, oh, you're trying to skirt this through. They'll be invited to every public meeting that you could possibly have.
And it's an annual pickleball racket permit, all that. Neighbors were included as well?
Yeah, we had five of the neighbors around it, but for the community meeting, we'll do it again. We'll hand deliver the notes for that one, yes.
So your subset of people that you emailed, you said, well, people picked up brackets, people have permits, people who did this, people who did that.
And then the general public. Yeah, there were some. Yes. I can't tell you all of them again, but I know for sure that four of the direct neighbors around the park were at that meeting.
Sorry. Let me ask my question a different way. Did you look in the database for addresses around the lake and invite those people specifically?
We invited everybody who held a permit. We did the basic, anybody who was asked questions about Lakefront, which were the neighbors, and then anybody who was in social media or our website.
So if someone lived next door to Lakefront Park and was not picking up a racket, was not...
There was a chance that they were aware of it, yes.
There was a chance they were not aware of it.
aware of it.
Yeah.
Or not aware. But for the community meeting, the direct community meeting,
that will be the.
That's when we do our direct. Not a direct. We actually take our parks guy and they put the letter in their mailbox, so we know that they get it.
That's what I was trying to do.
Yeah.
Thank
you. Yeah. Again, I think there's only, six direct neighbors and four of them are there.
Yeah, there's not very many.
Yeah.
Could you just reiterate, I know the answer to this, but just to explain to everyone that this is a proposal for these courts only. We are not considering doing all of the courts in the, so we have to
right
think
now,
about,
yes.
We have to think about this sort of, it's a little complicated, but we have to think about it in terms of just these
just
courts.
Just lakefront, yes.
With the possibility that West Courts might be redone if that project goes
that's true.
Forward,
okay.
But we won't know that.
Yes.
It's complicated.
Yes, it is complicated. It's always complicated, right? So
yeah.
We already had community meetings on West Courts back when we were applying for the OZA grant. So we applied for the OZA grant that we would have tennis courts and two pickleball courts. That's done. That's in the design. That's part of our, if we do get the OZA grant, That's what we have to follow through on. If we don't get the OZA grant, that again projects goes back a little bit because that wasn't funded at the highest of the majority. And then if we don't get the OZA grant and 3 or 4 or 5 years ago we go back and talk about that those tennis courts, we would open it again for community input. But as far as if we get that OZA grant for West, we are doing the tennis courts pickleball combination. So this design is exactly what Lisa said, is for lakefront tennis. Park only. We're not looking to redo tennis courts at Central, Shelton at this time. There may be later, but those courts aren't in need of renovation right now. So we're not going to take something that doesn't need renovation and change it now. Is there a possibility the board says put new pickleball courts, something independent of tennis courts? Yes, but we don't have funding for that either. So,
is it just like front? Tennis courts, or is it actual all the lakefront park?
No, just the tennis courts and the playground.
Just the tennis courts and playground section of lakefront park?
Yes, we're not initiating that whole lakefront plan. We don't have the funds for that. It's just the assets that we currently own that are at the end of their useful life, which is both the tennis courts and the playground.
The enhanced access to the natural beauty of the park.
I think so, yeah.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I have a question, and actually, I'm interested in sort of the philosophy of how decisions are made based on neighbors or the community. Let's pretend it's not the tennis court. So let's say we were thinking of doing something else in Lakefront Park. As the decisions are made, is it based on respondents about the project? Is there some preference given to neighbors? Is it just what the evaluation is of demand throughout the community? Let's say there's some new sport we don't even know about and then say 5 years from now. How is that made? Is it just people who are active and responding?
No, it's not based on who has the loudest mouth, in my opinion.
Right.
It's not at all.
Okay.
That's where you have your hard job as park district commissioners, because we give you all the facts, we give you all the data, and it comes back to the board to say, yes, we believe that this asset is really needed for the betterment of the community, because
right,
every park serves a community, not just that neighborhood.
So
yes.
Even if someone doesn't live nearby, their opinion would count as much.
Count,
we're assessing the need throughout the community.
Yes, it counts just as much as a neighbor.
Even
would.
If there's a very vocal group, you say, we still have to step back and say, what's the right thing?
Right.
I think we do take a pretty active role to not substantially harm the names.
Yes,
exactly.
And so even though that voice may be the loudest, or even maybe a quiet voice, we don't want to harm.
We're right. If you're making a change, it could be negative. Absolutely.
What negatively affected quality of life?
That was very helpful.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want negatively affected quality of life for someone, but at the same
sometimes
time.
Sometimes it's the perception that my life
yes.
is negatively affected.
Without
and,
knowing.
You know.
If there were, and my point is, if there were 20 people who lived near Lakefront Park and they wanted to build a climbing wall in the park, it's like, even if they were there and they were making a lot of noise, it's like, well, is that the right thing? We would say, is that the right thing
for the whole community?
Yeah, okay, yep. Perfect. Thank you.
And I should get an example of that. When we were building the trail, there were some very vocal neighbors.
Okay.
And their concerns were valid, everyone's concern is valid, but in
So you would separate that out and went forward with certain things.
But then we made slight alterations, like we didn't put a path right behind a backyard. We moved it towards the street a little bit more and things like that. So those comments are always very well appreciated if we can make design changes like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Biggest challenge in
your role. It is your biggest challenge. Weigh all of these things and try to rise above it and do what you think is right. So it's the good and bad part of it. Okay, very good. Anything else for Lisa on this matter? Okay. Let's move on now to, let me discuss the cancellation of the December
21st. I'm just reminding you, no December 21st floor meeting, but we will have a January 4th committee meeting. So.
Can I call in for that?
For the January 4th?
I won't be here.
Are you working?
I will be working.
Okay. Then you can call in. Yes. We probably won't have a Zoom set up, especially if we're in this room. Yeah. Okay. Perfect.
When we redo this, are we going to make those calls? Will there be anything in what we do when we do the microphone and the AV in here that will make those circumstances where somebody has to call in better?
That would make it better, just be able to amplify everything better. Yeah. We'll make sure that's a point of it. Or be able to do a Zoom or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Because that's critical going forward. And I see how hard Jenny has to struggle when we've got all this stuff going on trying to, and I just feel awful.
I could not agree more. And there are companies out there that will put, I do think if you're going to really consider the AV, a big screen TV here that has a camera, like a boardroom has, because that is only going to happen more and more in the future.
Yeah.
You're going to have more Zoom meetings.
Yeah.
You're going to have more everything.
Or just want to be able to present it
Right.
So we are looking at a lot higher costs. We've already got preliminary to do that. It's probably
excellent.
At least double.
Good.
So
well, no, cost double.
If we put $25,000 on the budget, it's going to be at least $50,000.
You know, it may just be
that.
Right. That's one of the things where it's just modernizing the building for the needs of the community and the board, quite frankly. It's just...
Because when it goes bad, it's so frustrating and so...
Do
you think that we could rent, if we did something like that, people would rent space for the use of it and we could pay for it that way?
They would use it for bar mitzvahs, for sure. That's kind of where we started with this, where the sound is not good in this room, and we're bringing in temporary speakers and futzing around with different connections. We want to be able to just plug in and go. The second... part of that was how do we make meetings like this amplify better, community meetings. So if we expand the scope, it is up in the $50,000 to $75,000 for a turnkey solution.
Yeah.
We've already had Apt out here. We've had them tell us, you know, the new projectors are $10,000 and $12,000 for the quality ones we're talking about. So $25,000 will definitely not do it. But we can definitely expand the scope if that's what the board wants us to do.
Well, I was just thinking like you could pay for it through expanding. Like,
we would start charging. Yeah.
Charging.
We would add it as an add-on. Yeah, for
but
sure.
You can actually charge, I mean, because I'm looking at this right now, I'm looking at the state system. You can charge separate for that. Most of them do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was kind of our plan.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking of, like, you know, we had people coming to the meeting today, and they come at a specific time and a specific thing, and, like, you could easily do that. And those are the things that are tough in this room. So I think you make a great point. If you're going to modernize it, that's one where you modernize it right the first time.
And if it's a fail after all that, it'll be just frustrating. So
well, we'll look to see if we can. John can go back to that old printing room that Carol left behind.
I want to see you in 2022.
Okay. So interestingly, any other business here for us?
No.
Okay, then we will move to executive session. The board will now enter into closed session where no action will be taken. I entertain a motion that pursuant to Section 5 ILCS 120/2 of the Open Meetings Act, the board will enter closed session to discuss personnel as mandated by Section 2.065 ILCS 120/2C1. Those present during executive session will include all commissioners and Lisa Shepherd.
And also Bobby Collins,
and Bobby
John,
Collins,
and Chris.
And John Katera and Chris Liner.
I entertain a motion to return to open session. I need a second.
Good job, Carol.
Okay. Lisa, note the time and do a roll call vote, please.
Member Bourne?
Yes.
Member Colby?
Yes.
Member Schneider?
Yes.
Member Spain?
Yes.
Chair Brooks?
Yes. Motion passed.
Is there a
entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Colby?
Yes.
Commissioner Bourne?
Yes.
Member Schneider?
Yes.
Member Spain?
Yeah.
Chair Brooks?
Yes.
Yes,
motion passes.
Done.
Meeting adjourned.